This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
I know some of you and what you're involved in, but I wish I could know what each lady here is involved in. I really like workshops to be a time of open sharing, and I know with recording that gets a little bit complicated, but when I have a time when I'm asking for people to share, I'll probably just repeat a lot of what you're saying so that it gets on the recording. So you have your handouts. I have here at the top of the page two books that I really found helpful. One is an old book called The Missionary Wife and Her Work. I think it had been in our church library, then Merle's mom had it. I'm not sure. It's an old book. But I read it a couple times, and it's just very good. She surveyed a lot of women who had been in mission work and compiled their findings and, you know, their life struggles and their advice. The second one I read is called Six Simple Steps, Finding Contentment and Joy as a Ministry Wife by Diana Davis, and that one's brand new. So I have an old one and a new one. And this Six Simple Steps is one that Merle found when he was downloading books to his Kindle. And so I don't even have it in paper form. He downloaded it and I read it, and it is just a very practical book. So if any of you are wanting new life or new just refreshment in being a ministry wife, I would recommend it. She's very practical. She gives a lot of helpful suggestions and tips. Well, just to get our minds going, when you think of the New Testament women especially, and how we as wives can be involved in ministry, how did they do it? Dorcas sewed. That'd be meeting the needs of needy people. Martha cooked. Okay, that's in the Old Testament. It gets even broader in the Old Testament, you know, when you think of Judges. I'm kind of limiting this one, but that's sending a meal is involved in hospitality too. Any more? They ministered to him out of their finances. That is in Luke 8:3. So that was Joanne and Susanna. So women were helping financially.
Who washed his clothes?
Maybe they were doing that too. Maybe they were washing his clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, someone looked that verse up. I'm pretty sure it mentions finances there too. Does someone read it? And if you find it, let me know. It's Luke 8:3. That's right. Priscilla and Aquila taught. And I think when it mentions them as a couple, her name is often first, which kind of gives you the impression she was a little more outgoing maybe, or a little more assertive. Yes. They provided for him from their substance, so it doesn't necessarily just mean financially. It could have been with washing and feeding and all that too. You know, another thing that blesses me as a woman is reading how women in the New Testament went to Jesus with their needs. And they actually minister to me in that way, because they give me hope. Even though each story is different, when I see a lady admitting her need and sharing out of her need, like I was just in Barb Koblenz's session, I had to leave early, but it, you know, blessed me when she was sharing some personal stories that I know were very deep in her heart. When a person does that, it really gives hope to me too. So let's remember that as women, that when we are sharing our vulnerability, we're ministering. Okay, I'm thinking of a couple more. What about Elizabeth and Mary? How did they serve and how did they minister? They raised very important children. And I think of the ladies who anointed Jesus' feet, being very vulnerable and lavish in what they gave. Okay. So do we do the same type of ministry in our churches today? When I was asking myself these questions, it was encouraging to me to think, yes, we do. We bear children. We use hospitality to bless people. We have times when we're vulnerable and showing our need and giving other people hope. We give financially and out of our substance. And remember, when we're doing it for someone else, we're doing it for Jesus. It says in Matthew 26. We sow. And some of us do one of these more than another. You know, we have our different ways, but corporately, as women, we're doing these things. What challenges have you faced in ministry?
He has a burden for youth.
Okay.
Today. And to me, he's intimidating.
Okay.
People younger in the class. And I felt a burden for young mothers in the church because they are walking where I walked at one point, and I remember how difficult it was. Mm-hmm. And for me to embrace his passion mm-hmm. along with mine, I think is a challenge that I have faced.
So
to embrace the burden for youth because it is his burden.
So differences in callings, maybe unity and purpose. Mm-hmm. So that can be a challenge.
But to also try to embrace what he feels deeply.
Yeah, we face that too as a couple. So you have more of a burden for young wives. Mm-hmm. You see them facing things you've already faced, and your husband has more of a burden for young people. And they intimidate you. Mm-hmm. Although the young wives don't. Yeah, for Merle and I, we have some different levels of interest in different things too. And so, you know, you see some couples, they do everything together, and I would think of their two circles as being much more one big circle. And then there's couples who she has this set of interests, he has this set. And they have some overlap, so it's two circles side by side. And that's going to vary from couple to couple, how much those two circles overlap. But I really like what you said about wanting to honor and embrace his calling too. So how do we do that? How have you done that? You just try to get involved with young people. And how about some of the rest of you? How have you done this in areas of difference in your husband's and your calling?
My husband and I is listening to each other's hearts.
Listening to each other's hearts?
Because, yeah, we're very different.
Mm-hmm.
And listen to his passion and support and bless. And mm-hmm. show interest.
Showing interest in what he's doing. You know, isn't that just the way it is, where one one part of the couple can be more compassionate or whatever, and the other is a little more business-minded. And yet if you honor each other, you both can become, like, you can become more compassionate too and caring for him. One area that I've struggled a bit with, you know, has been a challenge for me in ministry, is Merle's travel. And I know some wives just travel with their husbands all the time. We haven't done it that way. And we had to come into place much earlier in our marriage where I had to know what my limits were. And so he said, you need to share with me. I need to talk with you more about my schedule so that you have more input into it. And that has been a blessing for us. So I kind of have this percentage of time I can handle us being away from home. And he tries to abide by that. You know, he doesn't always, but you know, I kind of, for me, it makes a difference when it's getting to be a different percentage. I start minding it more. And I check up, and sure enough, it's more than that. So yeah, we have our limitations. The thing for me that's been hard is I tend to be a perfectionist, and I want to be a good wife. And so when I wasn't admitting my own limitations, the anger was building in me, and I was taking it out on my children. But at that time, they were smaller. And it was hard for me to admit my weakness. But since then, I've learned to embrace weakness a lot more and realize that in weakness, we're strong in other ways than if we can do everything. You feel guilty if you say no. Well, I like that percentage of time away, it's whether I'm alone or not. That we kind of have, you know, certain. For us, it's about a fourth of the time being away from home is kind of what is the limit for me. But then I would be home alone sometimes. I guess I challenge us as women when we are feeling guilty. If we've prayed about it and made that decision to try not to wallow in guilt, then, you know, you can change your thing for the next time, but that's something that I struggle with too. It is really a blessing today to have cell phones and messaging. We can do it in Haiti now. Like when he used to go to Haiti and I wasn't along, I'd have to wait for a week almost to hear from him. But now he can text and call. It's quite amazing. So that does help.
One of the areas that I struggled with, I wasn't aware of that, was the putting all on. Then I was sighing, frustrated.
And, why were you frustrated?
I was hearing this. It's better to stay home.
What were you frustrated about? Okay, getting everything done. Sometimes when I'm along and he's really busy, and I don't know, like it happened yesterday, we hadn't been here for the day before. Last time when there was a reach thing, we were just here for the Thursday and Friday. So we came yesterday and he thought I'd be able to sit in the meetings. And you know, when the men were having their ministry meetings and stuff, he said, yeah, he thinks it's fine if I sit in there. Oh, I guess I could have, but not many of the other wives. There weren't other wives in those meetings. And so I wasn't sure what to do. And I could have been home. I could have been doing things. And I started getting some attitudes. And I struggle with that sometimes when I go along with him other places too. Maybe it's more because I want to be involved with things. And so I was sharing my frustration with some ladies. And for me, often if I don't say anything, and just stew, I just keep stewing. But once I voice it, I see what it is. And so then, after I voiced it, I could repent. And so I was telling him, I really want to stand by you and bless you. and I'll be okay. If people are asking you questions and you can't pay attention to me and it's mealtime and I need to get in line, don't worry about me. I'll take care. You know, I can do things that help, that I enjoy too. I can be talking with women and interacting. I don't have to just be such a leech. I don't know if that relates to what you're saying, but that's kind of what would make me fume when
I was talking about it at home before we left.
Okay. Yes. There's the frustrations for me too. It's really hard to leave home and get everything all lined up. And yeah, sometimes I think it's just easier to stay home. Yeah. Another thing that's a challenge for me in ministry when I do go along, if he's traveling in countries where the traffic and the traffic rules and stuff aren't like in the US, I just really get fearful. Especially, like, I can handle Thailand. Thailand's fine, and some of the countries that are worse than here, but places like Nepal and Haiti are more scary. I think the time when we lived in Haiti for a year, all my cross-cultural adjustments kind of focused in on the driving, and that became almost like a paranoia for me. I just hated being out there driving. And those roads, I'd be gasping and one time we were going somewhere and there was a Haitian guy driving and I was in the front studying the language and, you know, he was heading straight for another vehicle. So I grabbed the wheel. And that's embarrassing. Fortunately, he had a sense of humor. So I just encourage us, though, to face our fears when we do have those types of fears that hinder us from ministry. And Esther's attitude in that really blesses me. You know, when she had to do something for the sake of her people, she finally just said, if I perish, I perish. So for me, I have to say that about going out in that horrible traffic. If I die, I die. And the thing about challenges is they change at different phases of life, I think. When I was younger, premenopausal, it was more the mood swings that come with that. But now, as past that stage, I think I have more anxiety. I don't know if that tends to be true for women who are postmenopausal, but I just shared it with another lady recently who was, and she says that's true for her too, just worrying a little bit more. Having the night worries. You can relate to that too. And maybe it's because our children are grown and we're out of control, but we're very much concerned yet, and so we just worry about them a lot. And we keep wanting to commit them to the Lord, but our hearts just... Some things that have helped me with that are just to find calming songs that I go over in my mind when I'm trying to go to sleep, just to get my mind focused instead of that vicious cycle of worry. And also going, one of those is a song that's based on Psalm 23. But then it's hard to get through it without my mind going back to the worry cycle. So that's a challenge. What have been some guiding principles in ministry? Now this section is what I got more from the newer book, Finding Contentment and Joy, her 6 simple steps. I want to read these verses, Titus 2, 3 to 5. First of all, they're very familiar verses. Older women are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips, nor enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good, that they may encourage the younger women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be dishonored. So much is in that. So that has lots of guiding principles in it. Another thing I have written down there is to talk less and listen more. And it helps in hospitality, if you're going to have unexpected guests, if you have a organized home, it doesn't have to be immaculate and spotless. Someone said, you know, order comes before sweeping, and sweeping comes before dusting. So if you at least have a bit of a, for your younger wives, a bit of order of how you're going to, what's a priority and keeping your house orderly, that might help. If you have things in place, that's more important than having everything clean. But number one, just relax. Relax in who you are as a woman, and that you're not exactly like another woman who's in ministry in the church. You have a separate set of gifts and callings. Embrace that. It's a process. I know we struggle with that. But find verses that encourage you to rest in God's grace and love for you. Very personal verses. The one that has been that for me has been Psalm 103. I think it's 4b. One day I was meditating on that, and just the thought of him crowning me with his love and compassion just blessed me so much. And later on in that same chapter, verses 10 to 14, it talks about his compassion and long-suffering with us. For you personally, that's true. Rest in his grace and love. But if you were to think of a person coming to your house, describing you, would restful be one of those adjectives? Or what adjectives do you think people would use to describe you? I would like it to be more for me. I want to think about that. For Mary and her calling of being the mother of Jesus, you know, that could have been really intimidating, really scary. But in Luke 1, verses 46 to 56, she just goes through a beautiful thing of praising God. And I think that was when she was meeting Elizabeth. So she already had some time to adjust to it. You know, it had to grow on her. But I think I'll read those verses because it just shows a good example of acceptance and trust, giving praise, remembering past blessings, and rejoicing in her calling. Those things can help us relax. Luke 1, 46 to 56. And Mary said, "My soul exalts the Lord, and my spirit has rejoiced in God my Savior, for he has had regard for the humble state of his bondslave. For behold, from this time on, all generations will count me blessed. For the Mighty One has done great things for me, and holy is his name. And his mercy is upon generation after generation toward those who fear him. He has done mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who were proud in the thoughts of their heart. He has brought down rulers from their thrones. He has exalted those who were humble. He has filled the hungry with good things and sent away the rich empty-handed. He has given help to Israel, his servant, in remembrance of his mercy, as he spoke to our fathers, to Abraham and his offspring forever." So he seems to really have developed the skill of thinking of God's blessings on the past on her people. Then simply smile. A joyful heart makes a face cheerful. And then Psalm 5:11, "Let all who take refuge in you rejoice. Let them sing joyful praises forever. Spread your protection over them, that all who love your name may be filled with joy." What brings the most joy to you in ministry? Having families over on Sundays for lunch. So no matter how they respond, it's kind of the same for you. Just to... Okay.
I enjoy
having the youth. having the youth group over.
Yeah, my children understand they're welcome to invite sometimes. They usually check with me that mm-hmm. patients because, well, you make stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You seem to be taking care of them.
So very good. So, just the non-spoken understanding with her children that they could, you can invite your friends anytime. That sounds like rest to me. You know, like you don't care if they come and your house isn't exactly like it should be. So when people express gratitude to you for supporting your husband, and even if you're at home alone with the children, they notice that. That is a blessing. Let's remember to do that for each other, for other ladies. What about being, for you who are married to a person in leadership in the church, what brings you the most joy in that? Seeing others blessed by his ministry. I think it really is good for us wives to let the wives of husbands know how they've blessed us, rather than telling the man directly, go to the wife and tell them. And often, go ahead. So having meaningful fellowship with ladies get-togethers and fellowships. Yeah, that means a lot to me too. And if I had been investing in a person and then, like, I really enjoy investing, especially if I sense it's making a difference and helping them, sometimes when they leave, when they just turn their backs on it, that's really hard for me. I've invested in a couple girls in the last couple years, you know, invested a lot. And then they both made decisions, just leave their Christian walk. And I thought, what did I do wrong? And I know that that's not all my fault, and I know that, but you struggle with that. So it's very meaningful when it's reciprocal. And even if it's not turning out, I'm still glad I invested in those girls. I never know how the Spirit will use it later on. You know, I can trust God even so. And that's times when we have to offer a sacrifice of thanksgiving. Like, it doesn't seem like it's turning out like we wanted it to be, but the scripture says in Psalm 50:23, he who offers a sacrifice of thanksgiving honors me. So sometimes when you feel like what you're doing is not, it's kind of all in vain, it's times like that that we have to thank God for the opportunities we have. And not that we don't change anything and refine ourselves, but there's times when we have to sacrifice a Thanksgiving thing. And to remind yourself, too, that you're doing it to Christ. Like that passage from Matthew 26, you know, when you feed the hungry, you do that, do things for those in prison, and then it's actually doing it for Jesus. It doesn't say if they even appreciated it. And sometimes people won't. But if we're doing it for Jesus, we still have a sense of fulfillment. Love lavishly, like, kind of goes with the next one, number three. And I have three subcategories here. How do you keep God number one in your heart? Like, how do you love God first of all? We're told to love him with all our heart, soul, and strength. How do you do that? Keep in the word?
Something I found helpful, focusing on things I'm thankful for.
Thankfulness again? Focus on things you're thankful for? You know how good it feels when your children thank you for something, or someone else does, you know it. That must be one way we're made in God's image, because I think He wants our praise and thankfulness too. God's always there, and you can rely on Him and thank Him for that. Delight yourself in Him. I really enjoy nature. It's very refreshing to me, and one of my hobbies is bird watching. And I'm just trying to celebrate that more and more instead of feeling like it's frivolous. And, you know, as I get older and I know the importance of balance of life more, and notice how Jesus withdrew into nature or into somewhere. It was outside, we know that. But there's something about nature that's just refreshing, and it's a way that I can delight myself in His creation and remind myself of His faithfulness and creativity. It's always at a high peak in the spring, starting up again for me. The birds are starting to come back. Okay, how about our husbands? How can we love our husbands lavishly? How do you encourage your husband? Okay.
The love there is more of a friendship love. And according to Rob Harley's book, companionship is his second name. He wants you to go with him.
Okay, so the husbands need a companionable love.
And it just means a lot to my husband if I go with him. Okay. And sometimes they will put out with feelers. They don't really want to ask you.
So your husband's, it's a way of you showing love if you go with your husband.
To show love, but to enjoy him. Mm-hmm. He's my friend.
Mm-hmm.
To enjoy him.
Okay, don't criticize your husband. I have that one down too, to others. And especially if you're involved in ministry in the church, like church leadership, and you might hear critical comments about the church leadership, don't get involved as a wife. Learn to think appreciatively of your spouse's good qualities. I mean, you can tell him in private, but don't do it to other people. Especially in the church. That doesn't mean you don't have anybody to talk to about problems, but if you really need to talk to someone, I don't think you should do it to anybody in the church. If your husband's in leadership there, find someone outside of the church. Let your husband know what you're happy and admire about him. Encourage him. Okay, the next one, how can we love our co-laborers lavishly? Romans 12:10 says, love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. And I know in ministry we have times of jealousy, we have times of comparing ourselves among ourselves, and feelings do get aroused. I know that because it's true of me and just from hearing other people's struggles. It happens. How can we take delight in honoring each other? How have you done it? Affirming other ladies? looking for ways to affirm. Okay, if you're away from your wife and from your husband, from your parents and family, if other people in the church remember your birthday or your children's birthdays, it just means a lot. Yeah. And so you can do that for each other. You can do that for other ladies in the church. And there's something so special about loving on other ladies' children. You know how it ministers to you when someone pays attention to your children in the church? You can do that for other ladies' children too. And if you do need to talk to someone, you know, I know the temptation is to gossip and just sort of put a feeler out to see if another lady feels the same way as you. But be careful about that. Try to be direct in going to the person if there is something that needs to be confronted, and do it in love and humility, frank openness, backed with prayer. It might be helpful for you to make a list of your closest coworkers and then initiate friendship with them and get the birthdays of their family. Love her like a sister, pray for her, love her children. Number four, say we. As for me and my family, we will serve the Lord. That was a good challenge for me, just to think of saying we more. Like for my husband and I, we're on the same team. We the couple, we the family, and we the church. As a couple, I'm going to be a crown to my husband, not rottenness, like Proverbs 12:4 says. For we the family, try to involve your children in ministry. I know there's times when we have to be careful we don't get too involved with church things and neglect our children. And we have to have family time set aside. That has been a good thing for us and our family, to have a certain night of the week that was family night. But it's also good to involve them in ministry for their own development. But protect them from church problems. Don't be talking about all of that in front of them. And we, the church, the same thing there. Involve others in ministry. For some of us, that's easier. I think those of us who are more gifted in delegation, we can involve other people. And for those of us who think we should, who feel bad asking anybody to help, it's harder. But do you have any suggestions on how to say we, the church? Do you have any ideas on any of these? We the couple, we the family, we the church, for this section? Okay, let's go on to number five there. Be resilient. John 16:33. Here on earth you will have many trials and sorrows, but take heart, because I have overcome the world. Fight the good fight that 1 Timothy 6:12 talks about. Sometimes when it's really, really overwhelming, and there will be times like that, it just helps to do the next thing. You know, when your mind is just really burdened down, just do the next thing. And I think it was Cindy mentioned, you know, that in one of the workshops, that there will be criticism. Was that you that mentioned that, Cindy? Maybe it was in Barb Koblenz's workshop. She was talking about criticism. There's something that we can learn from criticism. Try to take just the element of truth there, and then not to take it too personally. How have some of you handled criticism? It's been a hard thing for me, because I tended, like as a child, I tended to be a good girl. I wanted to do everything right, and so that's how I kept criticism and discipline away Some of my siblings weren't that way. They could be getting in Dad's face and take his anger, but his anger just scared me. So I was just a good girl to not engage that. So for me, even as an adult, when I feel criticized, I don't have as much practice in that as I should, I guess. You know, to understand, I'm still loved. My father didn't reject the ones who were more oppositional. He still loved them, but I didn't have as much experience with that in my relationship with him. So it's hard for me, even as an adult, to handle criticism. But how have some of you done that? Pardon?
Give truth to God.
There's,
like you said, there's an element of truth. Mm-hmm. You can apply it to yourself, and if it wasn't true,
give it to God. Mm-hmm. And let him ask the Holy Spirit to show you. Yeah. Keep reaching out to that person, blessing them. There's so many other things to be resilient about too, but those were a few things I wrote down. You know, some things, combating loneliness can be a struggle we have. Sometimes you just have to take the first step in reaching out. And how do you stay up when your husband is down? That can be a struggle. How to stay content in doing nice things for the troublemakers. These can be challenges. One tip she had in her book that I haven't tried yet, but it would have been helpful for me if it is true. She says when you're in a meeting with other people and you have very strong emotions and you don't know if you're going to be able to handle your emotions, and I haven't always. In meetings sometimes I have cried and been so embarrassed and wished I would have walked out. You don't know how it's going to be. She says if you press this your philtrum really hard, it can keep you from crying. So try it. When you're really emotional, to press it hard and see if that helps. Have any of you ever heard of that? I wish I could know whether it really works. But. Okay. Maybe it keeps the tears away, the sneezing or whatever. Okay, then serve passionately. God has given each of you a gift from his great variety of spiritual gifts. Use them well to serve one another. 1 Peter 4:10. So what you do wholeheartedly. And Isaiah 58:6-12 has a beautiful description of ways to serve. It talks about the acceptable feast, dividing your bread with the hungry, bringing the poor into your home, covering the naked. Don't hide from your own family. Those are all things that are in Isaiah 58:6-12 in ways we can please God in a chosen fast. Someone, I think Cindy mentioned it in her talk about learning what your spiritual gift is. That can be very helpful in serving passionately, plugging into what your own gift is. There's many different resources of how to figure out your spiritual gift. Cindy, do you have on the tip of your tongue what the one was that you suggested?
Uniquely you.
Uniquely you. Okay. That's one that can help you to figure it out. Another thing that can help you in serving is to write out your own testimony and just summarize it so that it can be in a conversational way to have it ready if someone asks you questions about your own spiritual life, just to be able to very easily give them your testimony of when you received Christ or a time when God helped you in life.
Earlier you asked the question about co-worker agreements, friendships.
Mm-hmm.
Just recently I started trying a little harder to affirm another's spiritual gift, especially the one that's kind of in the shadows.
Another spiritual gift you have?
No, that they have.
Okay.
To affirm them.
Okay.
Person that's kind of hiding,
mm-hmm.
just go and affirm them with their spiritual gift.
Go habits?
To me, it's a way of loving passion.
Yes. And as an older woman, we might be able to see that in younger women, encourage them in it. I think that's a good idea, to just try to affirm other people's spiritual gifts. If you see them doing it well, doing something well, to let them know.
Especially, you know, if you're kind of an out front person, they think, oh, you have it all. Because mm-hmm. you know, and I'm like, no, that's not everything. Mm-hmm. Just to serve in a quiet way. Mm-hmm. The kitchen is incredible.
Yeah.
That's true.
It is. Okay.
I find that sometimes the spiritual gifts is what brings us back to my first question, the challenges in ministry. Hospitality is one of my gifts, and bugs me to have people over and to have people at our house. And Norm sometimes in the evenings or come weekend, he's ready to come home to just
so just mm-hmm. we've
and
had
so
that too.
That brings in challenges because I'm ready to be with people mm-hmm. and he's ready to be home, and mm-hmm. just to find a balance in that can be hard.
Okay, finding a balance between the different needs of the husband and wife, when the husband might need rest and relaxation and the woman's ready to have company in. Yeah, and sometimes it just helps to figure out how often you're going to do it. Or like, if this could be once a week or every 2 weeks or something like that. You have to just talk it over. Okay, I think our time is coming to an end, but there at the end where I have, how do you balance family and ministry? I just think for us who have small children, it's very important to put their needs first. I don't think I've heard any lady ever say she wishes she wouldn't have spent so much time with her children. So I don't think you'll regret it if you have small children.
Somebody recently told me every time I say yes to somebody else, I'm saying no to my family.
Yeah.
And that's been a positive thing I've been doing.
When we can't say no, we are saying no. You know, in the choices we make, we are saying no to something. Just be careful about all you're saying yes to. And family life is a testimony. It's a powerful thing to those around us. When we lived in Haiti, you know, we didn't realize that all the time, how our lives there were a testimony, but people told us later, not just us, but other missionaries, the young men in the church, when they married and had children, they said that they want to have their children sitting with them in church. They want to be more involved in their children's lives because they've seen that in the missionary family's lives. So it is a testimony. Sometimes it can be a challenge. You feel like you live in a fishbowl. But it's okay for other people to let you, to see you struggling with your problems too. We can talk about that quite a bit. But one final challenge I want to leave with you is that our supreme commitment is to Christ. It's really hard to understand that for me sometimes, that my relationship with Christ is going to last for eternity because we're so much geared to beginning and endings. But someday you will be relieved of all your earthly responsibilities here. Your husband is going to be taken, or you'll be taken from him. Like, that relationship's going to be different. Your children all leave. Relationships change. But our one relationship with our Heavenly Father and with Christ, that's an eternal relationship. So nurture that and remember it, that he is the main one you're committed to. He carries you, you carry others. He strengthens you, you strengthen others. He loves you, you love others. He won't stop, you won't either. By Jean Forsyth.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.